I mentioned in the work meeting, the word generosity. And it was in the context of silence. Actually, generosity applies to many other contexts. It applies to everything, in fact. It applies to what we were talking about yesterday and the day before. It's really one of the basic elements of life and of practice. And so relating to just some of the day-to-day activities that we are involved in here and the situations that arise from those activities, using those as examples and the basis for discussing generosity seemed appropriate today. As I mentioned about the cooking, we don't have to look elsewhere. We don't have to bring anything else into the mix to prepare the meal. And we don't need to bring anything else from elsewhere to live our lives. And we don't need to bring anything from elsewhere to discuss. When I speak today or any day, I don't need anything else. What we have here is material enough. There is no place else that awakening will arise but here. There is no one else who is awakened but you. You know, we hear these big words that float around: awakening, illumination, enlightenment, nirvana, these great words. But in fact, it's nowhere else but here. It's like cooking with the ingredients that you have in the kitchen will allow you to make the perfect meal. Much better meal than if you are out accumulating exotic products and elaborate recipes or whatever it is. Special utensils, special dishes that you serve it in. Actually, some of the serving dishes we are using are probably something that is used to wash dishes in usually, right? Those plastic bins. They are perfect serving bowls. They hold a good quantity. They're lightweight. They're easy to clean. They are easy to handle for the servers. And the best thing is they're available. They're here. We don't have to go anywhere else for them. Actually, in the world of gastronomie, as we say in France, of haute cuisine, the highest levels of French cooking, and everyone knows how the French feel about food and cooking and eating. The latest trend is local. The finest chefs in France use only local, seasonable products. They use only the products that are in their region and only when they are in season. So there would be no strawberries in winter. No imported beef. Some of them are also only using organic things. Some of them are even growing their own vegetables, only using what they grow. Which seems to be a very sane ecological trend. Of course, probably there will be problems that come from that too, as we can imagine. Because the problems always arise when any of our actions are based on me, on my ideas, my opinions, my attachments, my belief in myself as being someone great or someone not great. Just me being someone, and then everything I need to do to maintain that belief. When I mention the word generosity, I'm talking about generosity that arises from a place that is not attached to this belief. It also is a practice that favors a non-attachment to that belief. When I say generosity, it's basically just openness. So it means approaching a situation openly, without falling back on my idea about how the situation should be. In the context of silence, as I mentioned earlier, why is it generous to be silent? It's allowing the moment to be without my intervention, with my words. It's allowing the others to benefit from the basic goodness of the situation as it is. It's not imposing my words, my neurotic need to speak, my desire to have myself affirmed by saying something smart or having someone respond to me, my desire to fill in what seems empty, silence, to make something exciting. And I say exciting, it may seem kind of bland, but as soon as we start chattering, it's making it more exciting. It's adding spices to the moment, to the relationship. We think, right? Because we're not experiencing the relationship and the moment just as it is. We're looking to add something to it. At the same time, in the example of silence, we are generous with our, we are open to receiving. We are generous with our reception. So we receive the silence of the other as well. We receive the moment as it is. We can, in this sense, generosity is an attitude of extreme wealth. We have everything to give, and extreme poverty. We are so poor that we are open to receive fully whatever is offered. Now this sounds all well and fine, but it's not easy. It's not easy to receive the fly buzzing around your head, right? It's not easy to, when you have this burning desire to attract that other person with your words, or fill in this very uncomfortable empty space, it's not easy. And we don't always act from a place of selflessness, let's say. Sometimes we can act with what we would call stupid generosity. Not stupid in the sense that we normally think, but it's not really what we feel, but we say, okay, I will try to do it. I'm not really feeling generous, but I will try. That's okay. It's okay if it's kind of an act. That's okay. Be aware of that. Your intention is there, right? It's also okay if you're not generous. If you see yourself, I want to talk. This is really funny, I want to tell that person about it. I really like this food, I want to tell them about it. I want to discuss that dog that's there. I want to break the rules. We're not supposed to talk. I want to talk. Okay. Be aware of it. Be aware that that's what it is. And then see that this is related to me, mine. That I want to put words there. I want to add some other ingredients. So, you know, in the case with cooking, I don't know what's going on. I'm not really following the kitchen activities, but I was told to say that today during the meeting, that there's too much food being bought or something. So I don't really know what's going on. But I can imagine that it's coming from a place of wanting to do something good, wanting to prepare some nice food for everyone, some place of wanting to share my special recipe or my way of eating. It's not coming from a place of wanting to impose my way on everyone. I'm fairly certain, although I don't really know. I don't have any details. I can imagine, having been a cook in a retreat, I can imagine where it's coming from. And having experienced a lot of retreats and a lot of cooks, I can imagine this is it. So then, okay, look at that. If everyone does that, then we would probably have problems because we would have the resources would not be used in an effective way. And we would probably have to charge more, everyone would have to pay more money to come to the retreat if everyone brought their elaborate recipes and prepared all kinds of things and bought a lot of food. That's just one way of looking at it, in a very practical, concrete way. As that might help us to see why it's important to just use what is there. On a non-concrete level, what is there is always enough, is always the right ingredient. we don't experience it that way because we have me, my, mine who's getting involved. But if we can open our hearts and just be generous with what is, generous with our presence, generous with our intentions, generous with our attention, receive what is there and give what we can, everything will be fine. The problems arise when we are coming from me, mine, my. And this generosity spills over into another aspect of the practice, which is discipline. Not discipline in the sense of rules and regulations and obligations, but discipline in the sense of forms and patterns, let's say, and structures. If I come to a situation with generosity, receiving the situation as it is, I have no, there's no question of discipline or not. I just do what is needs to be done at that moment. So, if I come to this situation here, and there's a schedule that says these hours for these things, I am open. I give myself generously. I receive generously. I don't have to worry about following rules or not. I just fall into the pattern of what is, and that's what is in this situation. If I come to it with my me, my, mine, then I don't feel like sitting now, or I don't feel like eating that, or I don't feel like cooking that, or I don't feel like cleaning that, or I don't feel like sleeping now. I don't feel like whatever, or I feel like having coffee now. An example: we have three moments during the day when there's coffee and tea prepared. Right? However, all day long, people are drinking coffee and tea. If you've observed a little bit. Sometimes even bringing it in here. Which is very interesting. Because no one said you can't bring it in here. And no one said you can't drink it all day long. However, the schedule was established that there would be three moments during the day when it would be there. And if we were coming to the situation freely, generously, openly, then we would just drink it in the morning, after the work period, and in the afternoon, and when that period was finished, there would be no more coffee and tea. Of course, this is an ideal world. It doesn't work that way, right? And then we use more coffee and tea than we needed, and then we are not taking advantage of the opportunity to let go of some of our habitual ways of functioning. We are holding on to them. Maybe even, I've seen this in myself, maybe even drinking more coffee and tea here than I drink at home. I don't do this now because it's really bad for me, but used to when I was practicing years and years ago, I never ate chocolate when I was at home. But when I was in retreat, suddenly I was eating chocolate. and like dark chocolate with the maximum amount of cocoa in it. And it wasn't like I was eating a lot, but I would notice during the tea and coffee breaks, I would eat chocolate. Or I would ask the person who was going to do the shopping to buy me some chocolate. And I never ate chocolate at home. So observe these kinds of things. What is this about? No one says you can't eat chocolate here. No one was telling me I couldn't eat chocolate. I know my teacher, I don't know if she still does it, but I heard not long ago, she told the people doing the shopping to no longer buy cookies, the cookies that were being served with the tea and the coffee. And I thought this was very interesting because in the beginning, when I first started practicing with her, there were no cookies with the tea and the coffee. At some point, I don't remember when, suddenly there were cookies with the tea and the coffee after the work period and in the afternoon. And then suddenly there were cookies in the morning too. And there were cookies all the time. And she must have decided that no more cookies. I don't know, I didn't talk with her. Coming from not a discipline aspect, not an aspect of trying to impose her view, but an aspect of generosity, if you can understand this. Coming from a place of seeing where you are, seeing where we are with this, with our patterns, and using this, taking away the cookies, to point it out. Not as a punishment, not as a rule, as a way of pointing out. I mean, a teacher, theoretically, I say theoretically because of course we are just human like everyone else, but theoretically, the teacher will not say, this is where you are, you're bad, that's bad. This is where you are, that's good. The teacher will just say, this is where you are. Point it out. That's the role. It's not about judging. So the fact that there are people drinking tea and coffee all day long, there's no judgment attached to that. It's just an observation offered with generosity, presenting the situation. Because what I think of as good or bad is of absolutely no importance here. It has no in French we say sans intérêt. It has no value. So if we come to the situation with generosity and openness, the discipline is no problem. We fall into whatever the situation presents. And mostly that's what happens here. Really, you know? I mean, look, the Orioki is a good example. This is what was presented, and everyone just fell into it. Everyone just does it. You know, maybe people are complaining, maybe people have ideas about it, I don't know. It doesn't matter. People are just doing it. Same thing with the schedule in general. Everybody just does it. They just fall into it. And when the schedule is not there, when the Orioki is not there, when we go out into our daily lives, then see what happens. Can you approach the situation with generosity? It's kind of like when you teach a child to ride a bicycle and they have the, what we call the training wheels on the bike, you know, and child uses those wheels, and then at some point we take the wheels off and the child goes. The same rules of balance, of steering, of pedaling, of braking, all of those things still apply. The child is not thinking of those things as something that's imposed on him, or a constraint, or some discipline that is really annoying. It's been integrated that to ride the bicycle, that's what you have to do. And the same is true of our life. You know? Every situation presents us with those kinds of things, like on a bicycle. And if we come to it with our openness and our generosity, there's no problem following along with it. However, generally, often, something sticks. We come to a situation and we think, oh, no, I don't like that part. I'm not going to do that. No. And the disadvantage is that we limit ourselves then. That's the disadvantage. And the same thing with, you know, with any sort of me, my, mine. We limit ourselves. So when we come and we say, okay, I'll have coffee and tea all day long, we limit ourselves. When I say I will eat chocolate during the retreat, I'm limiting myself. I'm not allowing myself to benefit from this, the situation just as it is. I'm adding something to it. And I'm not free. I think I'm being free by eating chocolate or drinking tea and coffee whenever I want to. But in fact, I'm not free. I'm bound by that. I'm letting myself be run by that rather than being free from it. Does anyone have any other examples of this that I'm talking about? In your own life, or that you've observed here, or I'm sure everyone can recognize something like this. And it's really helpful to hear, you know, with concrete examples, it's really helpful. As it is, I'm not really able to give anything but concrete examples. I said to someone yesterday, you know, at the beginning of a retreat, I often feel this way, and especially in a retreat where there are many new faces, I don't know what to say. I don't have a clue. And so I just have to stay right with what is, which is exactly the only thing that needs to be said anyway. As soon as I start looking somewhere else, it's like trying to buy special ingredients to make the meal. What I need to say is all right here. So the perfect examples of this generosity, discipline, me, my, mine, are in your lives as they are. And offering the possibility of sharing them, if you don't want to, that's okay. You can think of it too as a resource that you have that can benefit others. Because generosity applies to everything. I sometimes think of when I go to my job, I have a day job like everybody else. And I don't particularly like it. I work as a journalist. But I make it practice in the sense of I recognize I'm open to it, and I do it with open heart and with generosity, that by doing it, I provide resources for my family and myself. And by providing resources for myself and my family, I therefore can be here now. If I didn't have that job, I couldn't be here now. My children can therefore have an education and travel and have clothing and have a house to live in, and therefore they can then function freely and with generosity in the world. That's just a small aspect of how you can approach your daily life, your work, with generosity.
If where is the generosity or not about the wish to share what I know of my practice, speak for my soul, especially for people who come for the first time, should I go to them and tell if you want me to share with you my practice, I would be pleased to do it, or should I not even do this because it would be not respecting their silence, their desire, especially that with the rule, with the principle of silence. So I'm quite impressed with that.
Of course, with any situation, there is no set answer. The only thing we can do is approach the situation with openness and say, okay, what is my intention? Why do I want to share my practice? And do I have an idea about what that means to share my practice? One of the most generous experiences I had of someone sharing his practice in a retreat situation was someone that had been, who was a student with my teacher, when she was a student, came to sit in a retreat with a group of us. And he had a lot of experience, and he had far more experience than me. And he had no special position. He wasn't doing any of the jobs that are given. He just sat there all week long and did exactly. He was sitting there at every period. He ate an Oreoke every meal. He was at all of the meetings. He did everything. With nothing extra. Nothing added. As if it was the most natural thing in the world. And even the way that he moved, because in my teacher's group, people wear robes, Zen robes, black robes, and I think he may have even been a monk. And the way he moved with his robes, with everything, it was just ordinary. And at the end of the week, I was so moved by this, and I went to him and I thanked him. It was the most instructive week I had ever had, I think, just seeing someone, just doing what his practice was fully manifested. All of his years of experience, everything he knew, quote, everything he had done, everything he had to share, was absolutely manifested just in him being. There was nothing extra that needed to be done. Maybe in another situation, maybe with someone else, he did offer some, I don't know. For me, I didn't need anything else. from him. I felt, however, that I could have gone to him and said, what do you think about this? How do you do this in Oryoki? Or how should I hold my hands? Or I don't know. No. Or what do you do when you're sitting on your cushion? I whatever. I felt that I could. He just by being, just by totally embodying the practice, he made it clear that he was generous. He was totally generous with it. So the answer is, there is no fixed answer. It's important to see what the motivation is. Do I want to share for me, my? Do I have an idea about what it is to share, how, what people need to know? I can't really respond to someone's need if I have an idea about what they need. And I'm not saying that's your case. I'm just saying these are possibilities to look at in the situation. Is that?
I was thinking this retreat, it's been very agreeable, and I was thinking, how could I take it to my daily life? And I was thinking a concrete example, in the case of generosity, like when we are working with co-workers, and sometimes we get along, sometimes we don't. That's natural in human relationships. But when we don't get along, because when we get along, everything's fine. When we don't get along, sometimes it's difficult to be generous about the situation because we can enter in some power struggles or something. And if even if we want to be generous about the situation, there's always the question of, well, in the workplace, generosity is not exactly a feeling very common. So it can be interpreted as, I don't know, being overly flexible, and sometimes people can take advantage. And it's very difficult to decide sometimes if, okay, I want to be generous anyhow, or, okay, I would like to be generous, but I'm going to stick to my place and protect myself.
Mm-hmm.
It's difficult to choose, always a choice.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And we have this idea that generosity implies something positive, being agreeable, like you say, it's when everyone's agreeing, everything's fine. But of course everyone doesn't always agree, and then it's not fine. And then, okay, so then how does generosity manifest then? Ultimately, generosity, or basically, let's say then, it's very wide. So it includes when things aren't necessarily nice. So to be truly generous and not be attached to me, my, mine, would mean sometimes sharing something that you don't think is very nice. Share it if it's true in the sense that that's what's there, then share it. However, you have to consider the situation, right? So is it appropriate in that situation? You know, is it appropriate to tell your boss, you smell really bad and no one wants to sit next to you? I don't know. It, in what way is that a generous statement? You know, I know this is kind of a really stupid one, but it's easier to see the stupidness. I happen to have a boss who smells really bad, so I can use that one very easily. And it's been a long time koan for me of what to do about it. Or maybe not do anything about it. Which, the moment I have it. So, what do you, in that situation, are you coming with your fixed ideas about it, about it should be peaceful, everyone should agree, or your ideas about this person always makes trouble, he's such a jerk, he always wants to impose his view on everybody else, or these people always say yes, yes, yes to whatever the boss says, they're really annoying, you know, all this kind of stuff that, and I'm like talking from my own experience here, working in an office, and I know all the patterns. So how do you come to that then? Okay, so generosity means opening to the situation and acting then from that openness, not from me, my, mine, but from the openness of the situation. So what, and that involves seeing what your role is, you know, sometimes, example, in my work situation, I have to participate sometimes in a meeting where we decide what stories will go on the front page of the newspaper. And generally, I don't agree with whatever they are putting on the front page of the newspaper. But I don't agree with most of what they put in the newspaper on the inside and the outside. So, because I don't think that the most important information in the world is financial. That's pretty much what everybody else thinks. Okay, I come to the situation with openness, and I see that within the context that I'm functioning in, I have a certain role, and my role on that day is to report on a certain section. So I might be the culture situation, the cult section, or the sports situation, or something. I just do that. So I say, okay, today we are offering an article about an exhibit in Rome, or something, I don't know. And I don't, my role is not to be involved in telling them that the main story on the page should be about the economy in Portugal, or the war in Afghanistan, or something. If I did bring my opinions in there and start arguing with them, it wouldn't work. There's no point. No, that's not my role. And there's only, and that's okay. I'm coming to the situation openly, accepting the context, the way things are, the ingredients in that moment. And that's okay.
It's the middle way.
It's the middle way. There you go. That's how it comes back with what we said the other days. Yeah.
So in a way, there's not even a place for frustration.
I wish, but...
Not nothing.
Yes, okay, so if you look at frustration in the sense of I want it to be this way and it's not...
It's because it would be my expectation.
Exactly, that's true, yeah.
But at the same time, it's a world and of opinions and stuff like that, and that's developed in dialectically, or so sometimes it's you can contribute with something.
Absolutely. Sometimes generosity is to argue, make your point. The Dalai Lama has not given up on the Chinese. He's not said, okay, fine, that's how it is, I step back. And he's extremely generous with the Chinese. He's totally open. He's on and on and on and on. Great discipline. Just coming from this place of not me, my, mine, although he is theoretically defending Tibet, as we say. He's arguing, if you will. He's not accepting their point of view. And yet, it seems that there's no conflict there coming from his position, right? Because his position is one of openness. He's made a lot of compromises. He's not, he's not saying we want an army, we want our own government, we want to be the richest, have the biggest industry in the world, we want to mine all of these minerals and resources that are on our land that the rest of you want. He's just saying, okay, just let us live our lives as we want to live them. And he's continuing to make that point. Continuing.
It's not being very effective, is it? I mean,
Sandeep.
It's not being very effective in a way. Lots of people are being killed on and on in Tibet as we're speaking. So in a way, I appreciate his efforts and I really identify with him in many points. But I mean, he's dealing with a political issue and he's not a politician. So I don't know how I would do better, how I would do it better. I mean, I'm not saying that I know the answer, but it's like you in that role that you don't identify with, but how can you contribute to change it and not just be the observer and be an agent in some way?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is how the world functions, and that's how the world sees the Dalai Lama, or sees, let's say, well, another example might be Nelson Mandela, right? So, Nelson Mandela, who or Gandhi. You know, these are just the obvious examples. Who met what seemed to be an impossible situation, in a very unconventional way, in an unexpected way, just using whatever was at hand. Nelson Mandela had nothing. He had nothing. He was in a prison cell. He had nothing. No access, no weapons, nothing. And he, look what happened. Of course, you can say there were people on the outside continuing the struggle, doing the dirty work, we could say. Well, Nelson Mandela had the luxury of sitting in a prison cell and doing nothing. Right? But had Nelson Mandela not sat there in that prison cell doing nothing, what was happening on the outside could not have been happening. And I think the same thing with the Dalai Lama. Of course, we can't see it in the same way because we're in the thick of it. And it's easy to say with Nelson Mandela because he's out, South Africa's changed, it's certainly not without problems. The difficulties have evolved and have been transformed into some other difficulties. Things change. With the situation in China and Tibet, we can't see that. And even to have, we even have fixed ideas about Tibet should be free. China should not do this. We have all these should and should not. And I know very well this situation of the Dalai Lama. He's not political, and people think that he's making political statements, although he's not making political statements. And he recently has, just to make it even more clear, he has stepped away from his political role. Also, it's very astute because that way he's not linked to any political solutions. Because he's not talking about politics, Dalai Lama. When he's talking about autonomy for the Tibetan people, he's talking about Buddha nature. He's talking about the basic goodness. He's talking about the the inherent freedom of each individual. He's not talking about a specific people or a specific zone or a specific conflict. Of course, it's manifesting as this, but he's talking about something much larger. So, it's kind of like talking about apples and oranges. You know, we can't really compare the apples with the oranges because they're different fruit. The example of the Dalai Lama is what we can see in that is an example of generosity, let's say. And true, sometimes the consequences of generosity don't look like we think they should. So there was persecution going on in Tibet. And
I think certainly there's a difference between generosity by wanting to be generosity and generosity because you have no other choice. And I think like the Dalai Lama, when he sees the situation, he has no other choice than to be generous, but it's not him. You understand? He's generous, it's just generosity who comes. So,
well, that's transcendent generosity, what we call it, the Bodhisattva. Ultimately, when we see the true nature of life, of being, we don't have a choice in generosity because there is nothing to hold on to, and the other is me, and so I have nothing that does not belong to her. There is no choice, obviously. But this, again, I'm afraid that it will sound conceptual. But, you know, it's like we say the right hand is not going to steal from the left hand because they're one body. So, ultimately, there's no reason that they should steal from one another or hurt one another. We don't experience the world in that way most of the time, however. But the Dalai Lama is talking from that space of the one body. When he's talking about generosity, when he's talking about Tibet, when he's talking about the Chinese, he's talking about that from that place. So he has nothing against the Chinese. He has no reason that he would want to steal from them. And he has a lot of reasons why he could have something against the Chinese. If he's coming from this dualistic point of view of the right hand possesses this and the left hand possesses that. Much more effective examples are the examples of in our daily lives because we know them intimately. We don't intimately know what it is to be Tibetan or Chinese or the Dalai Lama. So when we're talking about it, it's conceptual. But in our daily lives, concretely, we have exactly the same situations. And those are the ones that we know so well, and it doesn't require much thought because we know them. Intimately.
Sometimes it's just for me, at least in my daily life, that line between action and contemplation, or just acceptance and acting upon it. How do you know? Yeah. How do you know that you should argue that those front lines about 1,000 people being killed, wherever, are more important than the agriculture projects in South Africa? It's going to reuse the water, you know.
It's not easy. And there's no set answer again, like I said to Sophie. The only thing we can do is to return to the present moment, return to this. And if we are coming from a place that is not involved with I, me, mine, the answer manifests, it becomes clear. So, you know, in my situation of arguing with my colleagues, if I'm coming from a place of wanting to impose my view of power, of wanting to be important, of having people respect me, in kind of an exaggerated way, building myself up to be a great journalist who's really smart, I know that it's off. That I'm not coming from a place that's constructive, that's healthy, that is non-violent, let's say. And the same thing applies to any situation. That's the only guideline there is, really. Is, am I coming from what we call a, quote, ego-based position, or am I coming from a transcendent, not in some sort of exaggerated way, but something that is beyond my little patterns and ideas and beliefs and attachment to myself. That's the only real guideline. So I guess it's about lunchtime.
10 minutes, yes.
Questions or comments? Yeah.
Still with the same subject of not being able to do anything, while we see others suffering, because it's you see it maybe every day if you watch television and you see people suffer, people have died in Africa because they have no water, they have no food, and we can't do anything. We can do small things and try to help, but this it's such a large, it's, the scale is so large that you feel that you cannot do anything to change it. But maybe to watch it and to be aware of it instead of not even want to look at it because it's too painful. Maybe sometimes that can also be an action, I don't know. At least not be present with that suffering, not, for example, not wanting to look at something that it's painful and that you know that you cannot do anything. Not wanting to read the newspaper about the people that are dying because they have no food, because you don't even want to think about it. Maybe if you at least you read it and you become sad and you feel sadness too and it's uncomfortable. But maybe the fact of not trying to get away of that uncomfort, I don't know if that makes sense, but mm-hmm. at least be present with it. I don't know if that can...
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. Welcome it with generosity. Be open to it. Receive it generously. And in return, give generously. Give of your attention. Give of your presence. In your this very moment, not necessarily go to Africa and feed people. Bring your attention, your presence here, now. Everything, everyone is doing everywhere with generosity, with the intention of realizing them, their own potential, realizing their true nature, helping others to realize that in whatever way it is helping everyone. Everything has an effect. So, and you don't do it because it has an effect. If you do it because it has an effect, well, probably then there will be problems. What?
You won't get attached to the effect.
Exactly. Then you're doing it simply out of me, my mind. to the result. You're just doing it because that's what there is to be done. That's what it is. And part of the problems that we have in Africa, and I say we because we're all involved, have to do directly with the way we behave here and now. With the way we consume energy, with the way that we function in our daily lives, with the way that our cultures have dealt with Africa, in colonizing, whatever. So everyone has a role, and everyone can approach it generously here and now.
Is there a difference between relating with the suffering, or just knowing that there is suffering? Suffering knows.
What is the difference for you between relating and knowing?
I have this idea that just to know that there is suffering is to know. And I have this idea that relating is somehow linked with this idea of compassion. Etymologically, compassion means to suffer with.
Mm-hmm.
So it's probably a stupid idea, but in the sense that, as in Jesus Christ, for example, the figure of Christ, the passion, his compassion, I have this idea that he embodied the sufferings. In the context, it was the sufferings of all mankind. So, hence my question, is there any difference between this mm-hmm. relating mm-hmm. with the suffering, or just merely knowing that there is suffering?
I ask because to truly know it is to feel it, so to relate in your terminology. To see that, I mean, the basic thing that we all share is we can say suffering. We all know it. Of course, it manifests itself in different ways in each of us. We all have our own particular sufferings. But that is what we share. And in the morning when we chant this verse of all of these sufferings that I've caused, because we cause a lot of suffering, coming from our own suffering. Because we suffer, we cause suffering. I acknowledge it. And in this verse we say it's, I atone for it. In English that works very well, at one. So to be at one with something is to be not separate from it. And the way then that we liquidate it or free ourselves from suffering is to be at one with it. There's no longer any separation from it. Because it's the separation that causes the problem, that causes the suffering in the first place. So, to relate and to know, to truly know is to relate, I would say. Is that?
Yes, because I was speaking about relating and knowing, but for me, knowing, which I understand myself, the knowing part, I have some doubts about the relating, but for me, knowing doesn't necessarily mean separation. So I can see the atone in the knowing. In the knowing
mm-hmm.
part.
Okay.
I was just asking.
Yeah.
Being aware of it.
Yeah. And again, if we talk of true awareness, then yes, there's no separation in that.
Yes.